Pittsburgh, I love ya. This is Brian Edward, and you're listening to Berg Vivant, Pittsburgh's cultural talk magazine, delivered digitally, straight up, shaken, and stirred. Tonight's broadcast brought to you by our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Zafalo's Banquet and Event Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, one of the most beautiful and unique venues in the greater Pittsburgh area for weddings, corporate dinners, fundraisers, and more. Visit clubzafalo.com. Off the Wall Theater, enlivening, educating, and entertaining audiences in the Pittsburgh region. View their current season at insideoffthewall.com. Arcade Comedy Theater, hosting local and national comedians, sketch comedy, improv, and more. 811 Liberty Avenue, downtown. Be sure to like them on Facebook or find them at arcadecomedytheater.com. Berg Vivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. You can learn more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. Terrence Orr, Artistic Director of Pittsburgh Ballet Theatre. Welcome to Berg Vivant.
Thank you.
If we were to dance a mile in your ballet shoes, what would the typical day be like for you?
Well, this morning and most of this last couple of weeks, I've been starting about 7:30 in the morning. I'm doing casting for 24 performances that takes about 210 costumes and roles, about 190 people.
24 performances of the same show?
Yes, and they're all different. I don't do, like, you know, three different casts of it and do it over 24 times, and everybody does it eight times.
Wow.
They're all individually done. So it takes a little while to get through it, and the company has about probably from 5 to 7, 8 roles that they learn. They will perform them all during the course of the events of the month of December. We open on the 6th and we go until the 28th. And so it's quite a long endeavor. Actually, we go to the 29th, I think. And so it starts in the beginning of September, our rehearsals with the school. There's two different casts of all the children in the school that come in. It's about 150 of those to get them all coordinated with the intermediate school and with the professional dancers of the company. It's quite an undertaking.
So on top of it,
that's not even the beginning. When you start thinking about the volunteers, the parents are involved, the staff that's involved, it has to come down and make sure that the performances at the theater are going on properly. There's a lot of activities every single day. We have lots of things going on, you know, the signing of autographs, and there's the photos with the Sugar Plum Fairy, and there's all kinds of activities, talks, so that you can learn more about the ballet, etc.
So I would say that in addition to the art, logistics seems to be a very big part of your daily operation.
It is. I mean, when you finish up, I start at 7:30 in the morning, and I'm going until about 6:30 at night. I usually don't really get out during the day. My wife comes and feeds me and makes sure I'm standing up and I'm vertical still. Keep me going.
It's got to be something to keep up with. But you have had an illustrious career in ballet. Where did it begin for you?
Well, back in prehistoric time, a very long time ago.
Yeah. Dancing with Dinosaurs. Yeah.
That's
right. A new show coming up, by the way.
Right. I was in California, and I grew up in the countryside, actually. And I was in school, I was big in sports, but I was not big enough to do sports. And some reason, I don't know why, but I wanted to take acrobatics. And it was probably to do with the Summer Olympics or something like that. And, you know, back then it was, you know, big deal watching black and white television and seeing the Summer Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it, so I went over to a place to take class, and the teacher didn't have any beginning classes. So he said, if you take a ballet class for about a month, then I'll switch you over. And I promptly said, thank you very much, and I left. And he came out, he said, come back next year, and I did. And he was ready for me the next year and put me behind this beautiful girl and said, warm up here and then we'll get to the acrobatics class. I never did get one lesson of acrobatics. And this is like, you know, 50 years later.
Wow.
So it was kind of an interesting start. I went from there to San Francisco Ballet, where I was a principal dancer. I left San Francisco Ballet, went to American Ballet Theater, and joined there and went up to being a principal dancer there and also a ballet master. So it was a great time in ballet and dance, as it is now, I believe. You know, when you look at dance throughout America, we all kind of complain that we don't have enough audience, but it's a lot bigger and more and stronger than it was back in my time when I first started dancing, certainly.
Well, do you feel that the art of ballet has changed during your career?
Definitely. When you think about the kind of ballets that were going on from the 40s with the things that I was learning back in the 60s and 70s, and then the real insurgence of some new ballets started in that 60s and 70s period, and also the defection of some major dancers from Russia coming over to mm-hmm. to America, and New York being the hub of dance, the dance center of the world. And so it was a very exciting time when you think about the 70s and 80s, and then especially with American Ballet Theater, I would think, you know, because we had a lot of stars coming in and out. And we were stars in our own right, right?
Of course. What defines a successful career in ballet?
Wow. I'm not sure how to answer that these days, because I think that's changed. I mean, I think I would have said back in my day when there was really only San Francisco Ballet, New York City Ballet, and American Ballet Theater in the United States, that if you were in one of those companies, and especially at that time, either New York City Ballet or American Ballet Theater, and you got into the company, you were having a successful career. I don't think it's like that anymore. I think it's changed a lot, because I think a lot of major cities across the country have a really good dance company. And if you're able to get into a dance company these days, I think you're having a very successful career. So that's hugely changed in the last 40 years.
Now, one of the things that I always hear about a career in ballet is that you have a very short window to peak. And I guess maybe that has to do with a lot of the physical strain on the body that it takes to achieve these things. Is that true?
It is true. I mean, in the first place, it takes you longer to become a professional ballet dancer than it does to go to school and become a doctor. And then you have your career, basically, you know, it goes from a time maybe when you're 21. Let's take an average. It could be a little bit younger. But you're gonna start learning dance when you're maybe 6, and you're gonna go until 20. So that's 14 years of studying, and really intensive over the last, you know, 8 years mm-hmm. for sure, in order to be a professional. And then, you know, 20 to 30 is the main range. Principal dancers seldom last longer. I don't know if that's just because of facility. There's a lot of probably reasons for it, but. You know, it might be just even more input for fresh new things to be able to do and the inspiration. But usually at a certain time, and it's different for everybody. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly some people will be able to go on and dance into their 50s, but not really very often. Usually not even into the 40s too far, depending upon the talent. And the more talented, yes, the farther they can go.
Do you still get out there and...
No. I actually stopped dancing when I was like 33. Because I was a ballet master for American Ballet Theater at the same time. And I wasn't getting rehearsed. I was rehearsing other people over an 8-week period. I only had 3 hours of rehearsal where somebody took my rehearsal. And I wasn't prepared and ready to go into the Met. And I went up to the director and I said, Lucia, you know, I'd rather not dance at the Met this year because I'm just doing so much as a ballet master. She says, oh no, dear. You're too valuable to us right now. And she had a contract on me, and she didn't give up anything. And so
I danced that year,
and then I retired from dancing. So.
Now, was that difficult for you to retire from the physical?
No, not at all at the time.
I was ready.
Well, I didn't have time even for what I was doing as a ballet master. I was doing the schedules for American Ballet Theater, and I was taking rehearsals for at least 6 to 7 hours a day. And so I didn't have time to take care of myself. And, you know, I was very physical, and I didn't hurt back in those days, so it was very easy to stop. In fact, one of my good friends said, you know, you have to get up and make sure that you're still going to be physical. So he decided that I should learn how to fence, and so
cool.
I did. I learned how to fence. It took about a couple of years,
wow.
and I had a great time doing that. And because of it, I got into doing fencing exercises and choreography for ballet. And I redid the fights for Sir Kenneth MacMillan's Romeo and Juliet. And it was kind of fun to be able to do something like that.
So, you know, I realize just in chatting with you, I've never actually thought about, you know, the choreography aspects of a ballet. I mean, it seems to me very classical.
Yes.
It's a very classical art. But when you, let's say, do an opera and uh-huh. you get the music, you know, you need to stage it on your own. So with ballet, is there choreography that comes with Swan Lake? Or does the, you know, or does the director, and this is probably common knowledge to a, you know, a ballet director, but right. someone like me who just, you know, kind of appreciates it from the audience, is that something that, you know, goes along with the production or something that has to be created new every time?
It's more like the second part of your answer. It's not like if you're going to do Beethoven's Ninth Symphony that you can make up your own way. It's written, and that's the way you're going to play it, but you might have different nuances as to how it's being played.
Sure,
the conductor
sure.
would make up his mind about how he wants certain sections of the orchestra to sound during the performance or rehearsal. But that's a little different for ballet. We don't have a score that goes back and says, okay, this is Swan Lake, so I'm going to, you know, dial up 303 and have Swan Lake in four acts, and so we can read it and everybody will learn their roles and do it. It is a hand-me-down eye kind of art form. And so basically it's an art form that lives in its presence and it's in people's memories. Hmm. And so it did change because some people wouldn't remember, or it changes also because dancers got to be so much better in the way of technicians and as artists that you could add to the choreography and make it much more interesting. If you saw probably Swan Lake from when it was first choreographed and produced, you probably wouldn't want to come back to a ballet because it was frightfully boring in a way, and it just hadn't taken the art form far enough. Now, there's so much more involved in dance that it's much more exciting to be able to look at, and I think the art form is alive and well today because of that. It's a very sensual art form. It's about the physicality of the human body, and it's about life, and so because of that, it has a very interesting aspect for people to come and watch it.
I like that. Have you seen the movie Black Swan?
Of course.
No, I haven't. But what were your thoughts on that?
I loved it myself. I hate horror films, so but I thought that this was kind of a horror film at some points when, you know, these feathers start coming out of their shoulders and stuff
previous,
like that.
Yeah. Kind of,
but I thought some of it was really fascinating what they did, and I thought the detail as to what dancers do and how they prepare, that was amazingly articulate as to the detail and the precision of what we do and how we act. Not all of it, some of it's kind of commercialized and you know the way people perceive the dance world is, but it's probably not.
Yeah, and I think the mainstream culture for the most part often doesn't really realize the amount of work that goes into it. I mean, especially, yeah. I think that a lot of male ballet artists get a bad rap, maybe because it's viewed as something that's not masculine.
Right.
There's femininity to it, but man, those guys, right. I mean...
It's changed a lot.
They are
tough. From my day, I mean, I think that you're very, it's very true, and it's changed a lot now in the ballet companies because it is very physical, and I think everybody hears that being a ballet dancer is hard, but they don't realize what the word means. It's only four letters there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And when you realize what kind of discipline that a dancer goes through and the physicality. Yeah, I was just having a conversation with somebody about 2 days ago that's on television now, and she used to dance. And she talked about the fact of taking classes and being in shape when she was young. And then now she does it, and she only takes like two classes a week. So she goes in, takes an hour and a half class, and then she's really sore for the next 2 days because it's hard and it's like doing a workout at a gym. Well, our dancers start at 9:50 in the morning and they go until 6 o'clock at night. They have 1 hour off and they're physical like that all day and they're doing it, you know, 5 and 6 days a week. So they're in incredible shape, you know, that they're great specimens as far as an athlete. Because they can turn and jump and do things that are just pretty amazing to be able to watch.
Yeah, like Spider-Man, they could be superheroes. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, when
right.
I see the things that they're able to do on stage, you know,
yeah.
it's amazing. So the current project here at Pittsburgh Ballet Theatre, gearing up for the Nutcracker,
mm-hmm.
which is not only a Christmas classic, but certainly a Pittsburgh staple for the holiday season. So tell me a little bit about the involvement that you're having on this production in particular.
Well, I choreographed this about 12 years ago, and it took me about 3 years to put it together as a concept. And I wanted to make it much more interesting than I'd seen. I went across the country and looked at probably 20 different versions and just didn't care for them. I thought that they were oh-hum, and there wasn't enough reason for them. People were just coming to see the Nutcracker because it was a tradition. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make it for different generations to have an interest. For young children, they didn't get bored, you know, in the second act, all of a sudden the Waltz of Flowers goes for too long, and the pot de deux started, and they go, Mommy, I want some candy, and you hear all this stuff. And
that's the
I gotta
end.
Go to the bathroom.
When they start opening candy,
right.
Forget
and
it.
So I wanted to find a way that would entice them all the way through the ballet. All of a sudden there'd be something for them. There'd be something for young adults to be interested in, and something for the grandparents to be interested mm-hmm. in. And so I put different kinds of levels of interest into it. And it's quite intellectual. It's quite landmarked for Pittsburgh, different sections of the city, and different kinds of histories in the city. You'll see a Scotch kilt that belonged to Andrew Carnegie. Now, everybody wouldn't get that. But the people that go to the university, they go like, oh, I recognize. And they start talking. And then you see that the Heinz truck comes out, and it's spelled back in 1906 differently. What would
really?
That be? Without the H. Because the government wouldn't let us have the H in it for a very long time. And it used to be Pittsburgh, B-U-R-G. And that's the way it is on there. It's just, there's fun little things out there that are just, I mean, and I really mean every minute. There's something up there for somebody to look at and go, wow, okay, I got that. To see a thread, lots of magic. I have lots, I love magic myself, and so I wanted to make Drosselmeyer very powerful. I wanted him not to be ugly with a patch like Mr. Balanchine did, because the curse to me was not on Drosselmeyer. The curse was on the nephew, and so he's the one that has to have the affliction, and it's on his face. And to be able to have him be magical, powerful, and fairly good looking. So the people were drawn to Drosselmeyer. They wanted to be with Drosselmeyer. He was a charismatic character. And so it's kind of fun when you look at the acts and how each section goes together and people get involved in it. And every year I get this from people who come every year and sometimes even more than once in a year. And they go, oh, I love all the new things you did to it this year. And I'm going like, okay, what might they be? Because I find that they say that, but sometimes they just haven't seen some things yet.
So it's worth seeing again and again.
Oh, for sure.
I think if you can
for
produce
sure.
that element on stage,
right.
that alone is fantastic.
Right.
You've really got something original.
That's
and the
right.
fact that it's also original to Pittsburgh is a great thing. So we're certainly looking forward to seeing this. Now, might you consider me for a non-dancing role in this? Or even is
what
there
about the King Rat?
Oh, yeah. I can do that.
There's a masterful
role.
Hey,
if it's one of those clothes horse roles where I can just walk out and,
you got to walk out. You're going to be about 20 feet in the air, you know, in a big major costume on and swinging a big sword. So it'll make you a little nervous stepping down those stairs and coming off these giant books.
Have a Berg Vivant martini. I'll be okay.
There you
hook
go.
Me up. Let's fly.
There
let's
you
go.
Go.
And I mean, the
you
cat,
might need two martinis to do that. So.
Consider it done.
Okay, good.
We put it in the vodka budget. But the cast for this must be incredible. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, the logistics of wrangling them. How many are in this cast?
Well, all together, there's over 200 in the cast.
Wow.
That do the performance. I think there's 210 costumes for the roles in the production. I've never counted them. I've only been told this, and I know it's big.
And when you step back, it looks like it's 200, maybe.
Well, I had to choreograph it all, so it took a while for me to do. You know, it took me about 3 years to put together the idea and come up with all the concepts.
Now, Berg Vivant does partner with Firefly Arts, which is an organization that provides arts education for families living with autism. And with this particular production of Nutcracker, there is an autism-friendly performance.
Yes.
So what is actually an autism-friendly performance?
Well, we'll make some changes in it, and we'll probably even make more changes that we're not quite sure of yet, but we'll have the lights up out in front so that it's not dark and scary. We'll change some light cues on the stage. We'll change some sound cues, maybe sound levels, where, you know, the ushers are educated on the fact that if a child wants to get up and run someplace because that's what they want to, we're letting them do that, you know, and the parents watch and what they want to do, you know, what they want their child to do. So it's going to be, there'll be quite a few changes in it. It's going to be very interesting. And I think it's very, very important. We're going to be the first ballet company to do an autism-friendly Nutcracker. And
fantastic.
I think that's pretty awesome.
That is. Yeah. Congratulations.
Well, it took me, I mean, when our arts director came in and spoke to me, she said she had about a list of 28 reasons why we should do it. And she barely got through the first one, and it was about 14 seconds later, and I said, yes, we're going to do it. And she's kept going, and then all of a sudden she realized that I'd said yes already. And I think it's just very, very important. I think she had a great idea, and I'm looking forward to do it on a regular basis.
What's the next big project for you after Nutcracker?
We're going to be doing Swan Lake. Swan
oh,
Lake opens in February at the Benedum, and that's a big ballet. It's four acts, and it's you know, it's a major work. So,
do you have any rest between now and then?
No, no, that's all right.
Do you get time to get out in Pittsburgh? Taking some fine dining, other forms of theater other than ballet?
Yes, I mean, certainly I get to go to theater, and we definitely get to go out.
Good.
You know, and dining has changed a lot since I first came to Pittsburgh 17 years ago.
Yes, that's it has.
It's very nice now.
Oh, yeah, we're starting to cover some of the restaurants out there and having a great time.
Uh-huh.
Pittsburgh. I mean, how do you feel about the art scene in Pittsburgh in general right now?
Well, I think not only right now, but when I first moved here, the arts are very important in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I think initially it had a lot to do with the foundation philanthropic support, and now more and more it's getting to be individuals that are involved into it. And I think that the cultural center downtown is a very important part of our city and the basic makeup of it. When you realize that, you know, Pittsburgh, I think nationally is known as a sports town. I mean, mm-hmm. You think about the Steelers, you think about the Penguins, and now you're even thinking more about the Pirates.
Yeah,
you know, they
that.
Did a great job this year. I mean, it's just fantastic. When you think about that kind of sport town and how the public around the nation thinks of Pittsburgh, and we sell more tickets to the arts than we sell to our sporting events, then it shows you that the arts are very important in Pittsburgh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Good note to end on there.
Great.
Mr. Orr, it was a pleasure chatting with you. And obviously, this fantastic production of Nutcracker.
I look forward to seeing you. Thank
Cheers.
You.
In closing, we would like to once again thank our spectacular sponsors and strategic partners, Off the Wall Theater, Cefalo's Banquet and Events Center, Carnegie, Pennsylvania, Arcade Comedy Theater, Downtown, and Bergvivant is a proud supporter of Firefly Arts, creating opportunities and support for families living with autism through innovative arts programming. Find out more and show your support at fireflyarts.org. And be sure to follow Pittsburgh's Cultural Talk magazine online. You can find Bergvivant, the It in Pittsburgh, on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribe for free at www.bergvivant.com. This is Brian Edwards saying cheers and good night.